This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. A federal criminal complaint was unsealed Tuesday detailing an alleged plot by Iran to kill a prominent politician or U.S. government official on American soil. VOA's Steve Herman.
The suspect, Asif Merchant, who was arrested on July 12th, allegedly tried to hire hitmen who turned out to be undercover FBI agents. Federal officials are not publicly identifying whom Iran and the arrested suspect wanted to kill, but media reports say the FBI believes former President Donald Trump, who recently survived an unrelated attempt on his life, as well as current and former U.S. officials, were intended targets. Steve Herman, VOA News, Washington.
U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said that the United States has communicated to Iran and Israel conflict in the Middle East must not escalate.
We've been engaged in intense diplomacy with allies and partners, communicating that message directly to Iran. We've communicated that message directly to Israel.
Now, the Pentagon earlier warned it would not tolerate attacks against its forces in the region. Five U.S. troops and two contractors were injured in an attack on a base in Iraq on Monday, which U.S. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin blamed on Iran-backed groups. Nobel laureate Muhammad Yunus will head Bangladesh's interim government after longtime Prime Minister Sheikh Hasina fled the country amid a mass uprising that left hundreds of people dead and pushed the South Asian nation to the brink of chaos. The DA's decision, announced early Wednesday by the press secretary of the country's figurehead president, that came during a meeting that included military chiefs, organizers of the student protests that helped drive Hasina from power, prominent business leaders, and civil society members. You'll find more at voanews.com. This is VOA News. Russian authorities claim that a Ukrainian force launched a cross-border incursion into Russia's Kursk region, but was being beaten back by troops and local border guards. The Russian Defense Ministry said as many as 300 Ukrainian troops, supported by 11 tanks and more than 20 armored combat vehicles, attacked the Russian border positions on Tuesday. They claimed that 6 Ukrainian tanks, 4 armored personnel carriers, and 6 other armored vehicles were destroyed in the fighting. The Russian report could not be independently verified. Disinformation and propaganda have played a central role in the war, now in its third year. The Ukrainian General Staff and Ministry of Defense did not immediately reply to questions. AP correspondent Norman Hall reports Vice President Kamala Harris has introduced a new running mate, Minnesota Governor Tim Walz.
At a raucous rally in Philadelphia, the Vice President introduced her running mate.
Welcome the next Vice President of the United States, Tim Walz.
Harris called Walz the kind of Vice President America deserves. An ABC News Ipsos survey conducted before he was selected but after vetting the GAN showed that nearly 9 in 10 U.S. adults did not know enough to have an opinion about Walz. The former teacher, coach, military veteran, and congressman says he's ready for the intense sprint to Election Day.
So we got 91 days. My God, that's easy. We'll sleep when we're dead.
Harris hopes Walz will help her shore up her campaign standing across the upper Midwest. I'm Norman Hall.
AP correspondent Lisa Dwyer reports that Israel's Olympic team says that their athletes have received threats as they compete in Paris.
The president of the Israeli National Olympic Committee says that the team has received centralized threats meant to generate psychological terror in their athletes. Last week, Paris prosecutors opened an investigation into emailed death threats to Israeli athletes. There was also a leak of some of the Israeli athletes' personal data online, and Israeli athletes reportedly received discriminatory gestures during an Olympic match. Tom Ruvaney, the Israeli who won gold in windsurfing over the weekend, was among those who says he's received threats. He says that politics should be put aside during the games. 52 years ago, 11 Israeli athletes were killed at the Munich Olympics. I'm Lisa Dwyer.
Bolivia's socialist president, Luis Arce, says that a national referenda will hold soon on the removal of politically combustible fuel subsidies and on the constitutionality of presidential elections or re-elections. The votes will be the first offer of a concrete path out of the country's economic morass and political limbo, but did not say when they would be held. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News. We'll be right back.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Wednesday, August 7th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris selects Governor Tim Walz as her running mate.
This was going to be a contest between a desire to enlarge the electoral map and the desire to bring the faith back into the election.
We have an analysis of Governor Walz's selection. Some African immigrants in Minnesota say they are delighted by his election. Nigerian analysts say the military's treason label on protesters is misplaced. But what really is behind the surge of protests in Africa this year?
I think the protests have to be looked at in terms of their own unique individual context, but I think the overriding theme here is bad governance, and I think the citizens not wanting to be treated as subjects, but wanting to be treated as citizens.
And a Zambian member of parliament escaped police custody while in the hospital. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Vice President Kamala Harris announced Minnesota Governor Tim Walz as her running mate Tuesday, capping off a whirlwind sequence of events since President Joe Biden endorsed her to be the Democratic Party's presidential nominee less than 3 weeks ago. Harris and Walz will kick off a seven-state trip to some of the biggest battleground states in the election. White House Bureau Chief Patsy Wadikuswara has this report.
The highly anticipated announcement has been made. Vice President Kamala Harris has selected Minnesota Governor Tim Walz as her running mate. Tim is a battle-tested leader who has an incredible track record of getting things done for Minnesota families, Harris said in a statement. I know that he will bring that same principled leadership to our campaign and to the office of the vice president. Progressives had been rallying around the 60-year-old Walz, who championed left-leaning policies as governor of Minnesota, a state in the Midwest part of the country that is critical to electoral victory. The former U.S. Army National Guard member and teacher is seen as appealing to rural white voters.
A progressive who's been able to win rural red conservative districts, who's been able to win across Minnesota, even in the non-progressive enclaves, who is somebody who owns a gun and fought and you know, was a combat veteran and is born in Nebraska. And so it's somebody who understands middle America.
In November, Harris and Walz will go against Republican nominee former President Donald Trump and his running mate, J.D. Vance.
Tim Walz's record is a joke. He's been one of the most far left radicals in the entire United States government at any level. But I think that what Tim Walz's selection says is that Kamala Harris has bent the knee to the far left of her party, which is what she always does.
Even before the Harris campaign formally announced Walz as her pick for vice president, the Trump campaign released a statement calling him a dangerously liberal extremist. Walz recently raised his profile as an effective attack dog against Trump and Vance, calling them weird. He has 3 months to introduce himself to American voters.
I don't know too much about him. I'm going to learn about him now that I know what she takes.
Harris and Walz will set off on a tour across key battleground states, beginning with Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, Tuesday evening. Patsy Widakuswara, VOA News, Washington.
U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris has selected Minnesota Governor Tim Walz as her running mate for the November presidential election. Kweku Nuama is a professor of the School of International Service of American University here in Washington, D.C. He tells me that for him, the choice of Walz was unexpected, but probably less risky than what some pundits think.
I think it was unexpected, but the more I think of it, the more it makes sense. This was going to be a contest between a desire to enlarge the electoral map and the desire to bring the base back into the elections. If she wanted to enlarge the electoral map, she should have gone with Josh Shapiro, who brings in Pennsylvania and this 19 electoral college votes. But Josh Shapiro is not very popular with the base because he's a strong supporter of Israel, and we know that part of the base, the activist base, particularly the young people, are not very happy with how the Biden administration has handled the war in Gaza. And Josh Shapiro has been defending that. So she probably wanted to move away from that controversy. What Walz gives her is somebody from rural America, the Midwest, a guy who has a very ordinary background. He's not a lawyer. He started off as a teacher. He served in the National Guard. He also served on the Hill in the House. And he's a very successful, progressive governor of Minnesota. What doesn't bring new votes into the equation, because Minnesota was always going to vote for her. But what he brings is enthusiasm for the activist base. All those people that Joe Biden lost are now very excited about this ticket, and that may just do the trick.
So what does that do now to Pennsylvania? Is it still in play for Kamala Harris?
Pennsylvania was always going to be a difficult place to win, but it should be in play. Remember, Barack Obama won Pennsylvania. Then you have Shapiro. Shapiro, very, very liberal governor over there, managed to win Pennsylvania. It's very popular over there. So Pennsylvania should be in play. They have to work for it. It should have been a lot easier if Shapiro were on the ticket. But they can still win it. Another reason why maybe she didn't pick Shapiro is the question of whether you could have two minorities on the same ticket. Because remember, Shapiro is Jewish. And Kamala Harris herself, a black woman, Indian woman, the question is whether America is ready to have two minorities on the presidential ticket right away. So maybe she didn't want to do that. But I think they can win Pennsylvania. They just have to go out and work hard for it.
Kweku Nuama is a professor in the School of International Service at American University here in Washington, D.C. Some African immigrants in Governor Tom Walz's state of Minnesota say they are delighted with his election as Vice President Kamala Harris's running mate. Winfred Russell is an immigrant of Liberian descent and a former council member of Brooklyn Park, the fourth largest city in the Minneapolis-St. Paul metropolitan area. He tells me that Governor Walz is an immigrant-friendly governor who supported legislation to support school lunch programs and extend access to health care.
The reaction here is of euphoria. I mean, a lot of people are excited. I am personally excited because I've worked with Governor Walz personally on a number of issues that impacted the immigrant community, the African immigrant community especially. So this is a very exciting news. This is like a friend. This is somebody who we know. This is somebody who has had our back, so to speak. So obviously it's going to be a ticket that many immigrants are going to support because we know Governor Walz and what Governor Walz has done for us.
When you say Governor Walz has had the back of the African immigrant community, exactly what do you mean?
Well, you know, he has advanced a number of key legislation that directly are beneficial and impactful to African immigrants. For example, and this was an issue that I worked on too as well, called Driver's Licenses for All. It was a bill that we advocated for. And that was signed into law by the governor, and it allows undocumented immigrants to obtain driver's licenses, of course, improving their mobility and access to employment and essential services. We also work with him and the community at large about ensuring that each kid gets a free lunch. Minnesota is one of these states now that, irrespective of your income, every kid who goes to school get a free lunch. It's not like other states where it is determined by the income of your parents or the household. But in Minnesota, he pushed through legislation and signed it that supported, you know, increased funding for schools and programs aimed at English language learners. And this has helped immigrant children succeed academically. For me personally, as a public health practitioner, he's guaranteed healthcare access. He has worked very hard, you know, with immigrant groups and other groups to expand healthcare coverage and access, including, for example, policies that benefit low income and many immigrant families. And one last thing, just before I forget, for Liberian immigrants, many of whom were on the TPS-DED, Governor Walz was one of the few governors in the nation that supported that effort because of the large number of Liberian immigrants in Minnesota and in other parts of the U.S. who were on TPS-DED and this annual renewal that used to come with it. It was something that was so burdensome, and it was having an impact on our school system, on our economy, and all of that. And I worked with Governor Walz when I served as a Brooklyn Park City Council to ensure that provision got passed in Congress. And so he's done a whole bunch of things, Mr. Butte, that directly impacted the African immigrant community primarily, and many other immigrant groups.
Winfrey Russell is an immigrant of Liberian descent and a former council member of Brooklyn Park, the fourth largest city in the Minneapolis-St. Paul metropolitan area. He was speaking with us from Minneapolis. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Wednesday, August 7th. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. While the nationwide protests appear to have subsided on Tuesday, the Nigerian government has said it will not tolerate calls for coups after some protesters in northwest Kano and Kaduna states waved Russian flags while marching in the streets on Monday. Nigeria's defense chief told journalists on Tuesday that hoisting the Russian flag amounts to treason. Timothy Obiezu reports from Abuja.
Nigeria's defense chiefs held a news conference in the capital Tuesday, a day after authorities warned protesters marching with Russian flags and heavily armed soldiers occupied the streets of major cities. The news conference was to address days of violent anti-government protests in the country and to respond to calls by some protesters for a change of government. Speaking to reporters, Nigerian Defense Chief General Christopher Musa said that flying a foreign flag is a treasonable offense.
We will not relent in pursuing those that have continued to encourage unconstitutional takeover of government or subversion, or those ones are into vandalism or destruction of lives and property.
Thousands in Nigeria took to the streets in Lagos, Abuja, and elsewhere last week to denounce President Bola Tinubu's economic policies and government. But security operatives cracked down hard on protesters using tear gas and live ammunition. Amnesty International says at least 13 protesters were killed nationwide. On Monday, hundreds of protesters marched in northern Kaduna and Kano states, waving Russian flags and calling for President Vladimir Putin to come to their aid. Nigeria's National Police said nearly 900 protesters were arrested, including 30 who were carrying Russian flags. But security analyst Kabiru Adamu says the military's interpretation of the protesters' intentions is too hasty and misplaced.
There are instances, if you go around, severally where Nigerians do wave the flags of other countries. One is a bit surprised that this interpretation, we're in a democratic setting and the role of security and defense organizations in a democratic setting does not go beyond either law enforcement or the implementation of security policies. They do not have in any way a role of interpreting or making judicial pronouncements.
The Russian embassy in Abuja on Monday distanced itself from protesters using the Russian flag and pledged Moscow's support for Nigeria's democracy. But Russia has been expanding its influence in Africa and forming security alliances, especially in the coal-ridden Sahel states. Adamu says the acts of the protesters might be inspired by a growing resentment for Western influence in the region.
The policies that are being implemented by the Bola Tinubu administration have the backing of Western countries, especially the institutions of IMF and World Bank. And so when people in an organic manner now endear themselves to Russia, it is perhaps an indication of that they are not happy with those countries. These are the policies that were supported by the Western countries and that Russia perhaps may be a better, partner, ally.
Western nations, including the United States, have said Russia's influence in Africa could set back democratic norms. But political analyst Ahmed Buhari says good governance from local authorities is all that is needed.
These people are not oblivious of the fact that there is a current wave across the Sahel they listen to the news and they can clearly see that Niger, Mali, and Burkina Faso have presented very young leaders who are coming up with very, very strong stance with policies that seemingly look like they're going to benefit the people. And what I expect from the government of the day is to prove to the people that they are better friends to the people than any foreign ally at a time like this.
On Tuesday, some protesters gathered in oil-rich River State demanding accountability. Nigerian authorities say they'll remain on alert to prevent any dangerous security incidents that may arise. Timothy Obiezu, VOA News, Abuja, Nigeria.
Africa has seen an unparalleled surge of protests in this year. 2024 has come to represent the growing dissatisfaction of millions of people who want comprehensive changes, increased political accountability, and better living standards. Among them were Nigeria's end bad governance protests, Uganda's anti-corruption rallies, Tunisia's down with dictatorship protests, and Kenya's anti-tax bill demonstrations. For analysis on what these protests mean to Africa, VOA's Douglas Mpuga reached political analyst David Monda, a professor of political science at City University of New York.
I think the protests have to be looked at in terms of their own unique individual context because the issues are different in different countries. So whether it's Tunisia, you know, whether it's Uganda, Kenya, Nigeria, and so on. But I think the overriding theme here is bad governance. And I think the citizens not wanting to be treated as subjects, but wanting to be treated as citizens, meaning subjects have to accept whatever the ruler says. The autocrat can rule outside of the limits of other arms of government. But citizens around the continent are saying the governance systems just are not working, and we need a different system. And I think this is part of the issue why you see a lot of these demonstrations across the continent.
Predominantly, these protests have been led by the youth. Does that strike you as odd, or maybe it's the attempt, given Africa has the youth, the youngest population?
That is very different from previous protests, because, for example, in the Kenyan context, the figureheads have mainly been opposition politicians. You know, in Uganda, we had, you know, Bobi Wine, we have Kizza Besigye. You know, in Nigeria, before you had the opposition figures challenging President Tinubu. But right now, like in the case of Nigeria, remember there was the protest against police executions. And then more recently, the protest against the poor governance of the Tinubu administration. And then in Kenya now, you have protests around the raising of the taxes, right? The finance bill 2024. The courts have recently annulled the finance bill for 2023, so that's another huge issue. I think the ripple effect of the protest in Kenya, that flow of protests also affected Uganda, which is the neighbor, you know, right across. And I think, again, the context of Uganda is somewhat different. It's a governance issue, but poor governance around, you know, a leader overstaying his welcome. You know, opposition figures are arrested in anticipatory arrest for crimes they've not even committed, but which the government suspects they're going to commit, which is a constitutional violation. So just this whole range of crisis, I think the youth are looking and saying, Africa deserves better, and and Africa needs different systems. I think these protests are only going to get louder, and they're going to get bigger.
And they don't seem to be stopping soon, because there are even threats of some protests in Zimbabwe during the SADC conference. How do you see all this ending up? What can they achieve, these protests?
So this is a good question. Protests will have different outcomes in different contexts. We had a lot of euphoria around the Arab Spring, for example, in North Africa, and there was this big move of the autocrats being removed, military dictatorship being removed, Ben Ali being deposed in Tunisia, Mubarak being toppled in Egypt. And there was this hope that, you know, there was going to be change. But lo and behold, we've had another autocrat reinstate himself in Tunisia, and we have the same old military government under al-Sisi in Egypt. So I think the protests really would depend on how organized civil society is in the different countries.
David Monda is a professor of political science at City University of New York. He spoke with U.S. Douglas Mpuga from Montreal, Canada. In Zambia, Independent Member of Parliament Jay Banda has escaped from what police call lawful custody. He was being guarded at Chipata General Hospital, where he was receiving medical treatment while awaiting trial for aggravated robbery. Zambian Home Affairs Minister Jack Mwibu says Banda escaped Sunday evening despite being guarded by two police officers. Information Minister Cornelius Mwitua tells me that Banda tricked the police officers by saying that he needed some private time with his wife.
As we speak now, his whereabouts are not known. The police who were in guarding him, the wardens and police who were guarding him, into believing that he needed some privacy so that he's left alone with his wife. It is that time that he used the hospital window to escape from the third floor of the hospital to find his way out and escape in the abyss of the night. So that is what transpired, and all the police officers or wardens who were on duty to guard have since been placed in custody pending investigations. But this is a man with a record of unreliability. As you would imagine, it is unprecedented for a lawmaker to run away from lawful custody.
What was he being held for?
Well, I think he was held for, among others, a charge of aggravated robbery that he alleged to have committed before he became a member of parliament, during which period he was the youth chairman for the ruling party then of the Patriotic Front, the previous administration, in a particular province of the Republic of Zambia called Eastern Province. And during that period, some or many of those who had committed offenses were shielded politically if they belonged to the ruling party, and that the offenses for which they are alleged to have committed can now be prosecuted now or be brought before the courts of law to be looked at, because at that time they were shielded under the veil of incumbency.
Last week, former President Edgar Lungu appealed to SADC, the African Union, the U.S., and the European Union to fight for the release of J.J. Banda from prison. What do you make of what he said, that if anything happened to or had happened to J.J. Banda, it would be the fault of your government?
I think that the statements by the former president were totally unfounded, because as the former head of state, he knows that no one is above the law. No one, literally. That is to say, only the president enjoys presidential immunity relating to issues or actions or decisions that were taken or made during the time that he or she subsisted in office as president and relating to official duties. So to now say that if anything happens, you are going to blame the government was totally uncalled for. But again, you understand our politics, that it is still a growing democracy. We have seen in the United States of America where a son to a sitting president is actively appearing before the courts of law. A former president of America is appearing before the courts of law and is found with cases to answer on various counts here and there. And it is taken to be the rule of law. So the statements by the former head of state were completely unfortunate.
Cornelius Mwitua is the Zambia's information minister. He was speaking with us from the capital, Lusaka. And that's it for this Wednesday, August 7th edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for coming on board with us this morning. For more African news and features, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. We are also on YouTube, where you can watch our TV shows, Africa 54, Straight Talk Africa, and Red Carpet. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa team, I'm James Barton in Washington, wishing that you will have a lovely day.
We are bringing women voices to the conversation on things that matter to the hearts and minds of women. from right here in the nation's capital to on the ground from all over the African continent. We hear your voices. Our voices. Right here on VOA.